Welcome to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring the random prompts of Daniel Rosehill as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters. Join us for deep dives into AI, technology, and whatever other random thing Daniel finds fascinating today. Subscribe on Spotify or your favorite podcatcher. Now, today's episode.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts. Here's Daniel's prompt.
Hi there, Herman and Corin. So for the past few years, I've been working with a thought leader in the world of impact investing, which tries to bring change to the financial system to make it more sustainable. And one of the innovations proposed or ideas proposed involves accounting for the harm the companies produce as well as their profits. So basically integrating financialized environmental impacts and saying, for example, an airline might be generating X amount in operational profit, but if you were to capture the environmental damage that it generated in the process, a cost which all of us have to bear through effects like climate warming, that it might not be profitable at all. So that's the idea. And it's kind of got me thinking a bit, a lot, about that particular potential application for what's called impact accounting. And when you look at kind of the alternative modes of transport available and think about what's really causing harm, and you look at how much, you know, they talk about lifestyle choices like eating less meat and how you can just take a single flight that'll like erode all your savings there for the year. And it made me wonder, I guess, or got me thinking that, is it really kind of ridiculous to think that we humans, that it is something that's going to be sustainable for the planet for us to fly at speeds on airplanes? If you think about, you know, the very concept of it, propelling through a huge height at vast speed, it feels like something that maybe we should consider is just not viable for the planet. So my question is really, when we think about the forms of transport that we might see more emphasis going into in the coming years, do you think there's going to be any truly, if we truly kind of got down to brass tacks about how much, what everything is contributing in terms of pollution? Is there any way that that modern aviation can be sustainable? Or do you think it's fair to say that it's a just inherently unsustainable practice?
Hey everyone, welcome back to My Weird Prompts. I am Corn, and I am sitting here in our living room in Jerusalem with my brother, the one and only Herman Poppleberry.
That is me. Happy to be here, Corn. It is a beautiful day outside, though I have been cooped up reading white papers all morning as per usual.
Well, you are in luck because our housemate Daniel sent over a prompt that is right up your alley. It is about something we have touched on briefly in the past, but never really deconstructed. He was asking about the concept of impact accounting and whether modern aviation can ever actually be sustainable.
Oh, impact accounting. That is a heavy hitter. We are talking about the work coming out of places like the Impact Weighted Accounts Initiative, the idea that a company's balance sheet is basically a lie if it does not include the environmental and social costs of its operations.
Right. And specifically, Daniel was looking at the airline industry. If you take the profit an airline makes and then subtract the cost of the carbon and the non-carbon impacts they pump into the atmosphere, does the business even make sense anymore? Or is flying just fundamentally at odds with a livable planet?
It is the ultimate test case for sustainability because aviation is what we call a hard-to-abate sector. In most other industries, we have a clear path. We can electrify cars, we can use heat pumps for buildings, we can use wind and solar for the grid, but pushing a 100-ton metal tube the air at 500 miles per hour? The physics of that are incredibly unforgiving.
I remember back in episode 241, when we talked about the tech behind Miss of the Fence, we discussed the sheer kinetic energy involved in flight and impact. It is a similar scale here. To get that much mass to stay in the air, you need an incredible amount of energy density, and right now, nothing beats old-fashioned kerosene jet fuel for energy density. And right now, nothing beats old-fashioned kerosene jet fuel for energy density.
Exactly, and that is where the impact accounting gets really scary. If you look at the numbers from 2024 and 2025, the global aviation industry was responsible for about 2.5% of global carbon dioxide emissions. That sounds small, until you realize that if the aviation industry were a country, it would be a top 10 emitter.
And it is not just the carbon dioxide, right? I have read that the contrails, those white streaks you see behind planes, might actually be worse for warming than the fuel itself.
You hit the nail on the head, Korn. This is the part most people miss. When a plane flies at high altitude, it emits nitrogen oxides, soot, and water vapor. In certain atmospheric conditions, that water vapor creates cirrus clouds. These clouds trap heat that would otherwise escape into space. This is called radiative forcing. Some studies suggest the total warming impact of aviation is actually double or even triple what the carbon dioxide numbers alone suggest.
So, if we are doing impact accounting, we are not just looking at the fuel burned. We are looking at this massive secondary effect on the atmosphere. If an airline makes $1 billion in profit but causes $3 billion in atmospheric damage, they are effectively bankrupt from a planetary perspective.
Precisely. They are subsidized by the future. And that brings us to Daniel's core question. Is it inherently unsustainable? Can we fix it? Or do we just have to stop doing it as much?
Well, let us look at the fixes first. Everyone is talking about sustainable aviation fuel, or SAF. Is that just greenwashing, or is there some there?
It is a bit of both. SAF is usually made from things like used cooking oil, agricultural waste, or even captured carbon combined with green hydrogen. The big advantage is that it is a drop in fuel. You do not need to redesign the planes or the engines. You just pump it in.
But I am guessing the scale is the issue.
It is a massive issue. Right now, SAF accounts for less than 1% of total jet fuel used globally. To get to net zero by 2050, we would need to scale that up by thousands of percent. And there is the land use problem. If you grow crops specifically for fuel, you are competing with food production and potentially causing more deforestation, which ruins your impact accounting balance sheet before you even take off
It feels like a shell game. You save carbon in the air but lose it on the ground. What about electric planes? We see those small two-seaters and commuter planes. Could we ever see a transatlantic flight on batteries?
Not with current physics, no. This is where the energy density becomes a wall. Liquid jet fuel has about 50 times more energy per kilogram than the best lithium-ion batteries we have in 2026. If you tried to power a Boeing 787 with today's batteries, the batteries would be so heavy the plane could never leave the ground. Even if we get 5 times better battery tech, we are still looking at short hops. Maybe London to Paris, or New York to Boston. But for log company, why could you afford it?
So we are stuck between a fuel that is hard to scale and batteries that are too heavy. That leaves hydrogen, right? I know Airbus has been pushing their Zero-E project.
Hydrogen is fascinating. It has great energy density by mass, but terrible energy density by volume. You need huge pressurized cryogenic tanks to store it. That means you have to completely redesign the airframe. You cannot put fuel in the wings anymore. You need big tanks in the fuselage, which means fewer passengers or a much bigger plane. Plus, we need to produce all that hydrogen using renewable electricity, which is another massive scaling challenge.
It sounds like every solution has a massive asterisk attached to it. It makes me think about what we talked about in episode 139 regarding the impact of light on sleep. Sometimes the technological solution creates a whole new set of biological or environmental problems we did not anticipate. We solve the carbon issue but create a massive demand for rare earth minerals or a global land grab for biofuels.
That is the second order effect you are always pointing out, Korn. And it is why some people argue that the only truly sustainable aviation is less aviation.
That is a tough pill to swallow. We live in a globalized world. I mean, we're sitting here in Jerusalem. Our family is spread out. The idea of giving up the ability to see the world or see loved ones is a massive shift.
It is. But if the impact accounting shows that a flight to London actually costs the world $500 more than the ticket price in terms of environmental damage, then the current system is essentially a luxury being paid for by people who will never even step on a plane.
Let us take a quick break to hear from our sponsors, and when we come back, I want to dig into what the alternatives actually look like. If we fly less, how do we get around?
Sounds good.
Are you tired of the sky being the wrong shade of blue? Do you worry that your personal carbon footprint is leaving a muddy smudge on the face of Mother Earth? Introducing the Atmo Shield Personal Ionizer. This sleek, chrome-plated neckpiece uses proprietary, unverified subatomic frequencies to repel greenhouse gases from your immediate vicinity. Does it work? Our lawyers say we cannot use the word yes, but our satisfied customers say they feel at least 12, more ethels. The end of the cure soon?
Thanks, Larry. I am not sure I would trust a neckpiece to solve the climate crisis, but he certainly has energy.
He is consistent, if nothing else. Anyway, back to the real world. We were talking about the inherent sustainability, or lack thereof, in flying.
Right. So if we accept that aviation is going to be incredibly difficult to decarbonize at its current scale, what should we be prioritizing instead? Daniel asked. What forms of transport we should focus on for the future?
The answer, at least for medium distances, is almost always rail. Specifically, high-speed rail.
I figured you would say that. But why rail? Is it just the efficiency?
It is the physics again. When you are on tracks, you do not have to spend energy fighting gravity to stay in the air. You are just fighting rolling resistance and air resistance. And because trains stay on the ground and follow a fixed path, they are much easier to electrify. You do not need heavy batteries. You just use overhead wires. You are pulling power directly from the grid, which can be powered by wind, solar, or nuclear.
And the capacity is massive. I was reading a report the other day about the capacity of a single high-speed rail line versus a highway or an airport. One train line can move the same number of people as a 10-lane highway, with a fraction of the land use.
Exactly. And in 2026, we are seeing this play out in places like China and Europe. China now has over 45,000 kilometers of high-speed rail. They have essentially replaced their domestic short-haul flight market with trains that go 200 miles per hour. In Europe, they are actually starting to ban short-haul flights where a viable train alternative exists.
That seems like a very practical application of impact accounting. If the train can do the journey in under 4 hours and has 90% lower emissions, the flight simply should not exist in a rational economy.
Right, but the challenge is the infrastructure cost. Building tracks is expensive and takes a long time. You have to deal with land rights, tunneling, and massive upfront capital. It is much easier to just build an airport and use the free highway of the sky.
But that sky is not free. That is the whole point of impact accounting. We have just been ignoring the bill.
Precisely. If we took the subsidies that currently go to aviation fuel and redirected them toward rail infrastructure, the math would look very different. There is also the time cost misconception. People think flying is faster, but for a 500-mile trip, when you factor in travel to the airport, security, boarding, and then the reverse at the other end, a high-speed train from city center to city center is often faster and much less stressful.
I have experienced that myself. Taking the train through Europe is a completely different experience than being crammed into a metal tube. You actually see the transition of the landscape. It feels more human.
It is. And then there are the more out there technologies. We have talked about maglev and hyperloop in the past. Maglev is already working in places like Japan and South Korea. By using magnets to levitate the train, you eliminate rolling resistance entirely. You can hit speeds of over 370 miles per hour.
That starts to compete with planes even on longer distances.
It does. The problem is the cost. Maglev tracks are incredibly expensive to build and maintain because the tolerances are so tight. And Hyperloop? Well, Hyperloop is still a bit of a dream in 2026. The engineering challenges of maintaining a vacuum in a 1,000-mile tube are immense.
It feels like we are looking for a silver bullet when we already have a silver arrow, which is standard high-speed rail. But what about the oceans? If we are talking about truly global travel, we cannot build a bridge to New York from here.
That is the hardest part. For transcontinental travel, we are currently stuck with ships or planes. Shipping is actually relatively efficient per ton of cargo, but for passengers, it is slow. We are talking about a week to cross the Atlantic.
Which brings us back to a cultural shift. Maybe the future of sustainable transport is not just about changing the vehicle, but changing our relationship with time and distance.
I think that is the most profound takeaway from the impact accounting movement. It forces us to ask, is this trip actually worth the cost? Not just the dollars, but the cost to the commons. Maybe we do not fly across the world for a two-day business meeting that could have been a video call. Maybe we take one long vacation every 2 years instead of four short ones every year.
It is a return to a more deliberate way of living. In episode 264, we talked about the Model Context Protocol and how AI is making remote collaboration much more seamless. If we can work together effectively without being in the same room, the necessity of frequent flying drops significantly.
Exactly. We use technology to reduce the need for physical movement, and then we use the most efficient physical movement possible for the trips we do take.
So, to summarize Daniel's question, is aviation inherently unsustainable?
In its current form and scale, yes. The physics of high-altitude, high-speed flight are simply too carbon-intensive and have too many non-CO2 warming effects to be compatible with a net-zero world at the volumes we are currently seeing. We can make it better with SAF and hydrogen, but those solutions are incredibly hard to scale.
But it is not a no forever. It is a not like this.
Right. It is about right sizing. Using aviation for the things only aviation can do, like crossing oceans or reaching remote areas and moving everything else to the ground. And for the flights that remain, they will likely become much more expensive as the true cost is priced in.
Which means flying might go back to being a rare special event rather than a casual commute.
Which, from an impact accounting perspective, is exactly what needs to happen.
It is fascinating how much of this comes down to just being honest about the numbers. We have been living in a period of carbon debt, and the bill is coming due.
It is. And the companies that survive will be the ones that start accounting for that debt now, rather than waiting for the atmosphere to foreclose on them.
Well, I think we have given Daniel plenty to chew on. Before we wrap up, Herman, do you have any practical takeaways for our listeners? What can a regular person do with this information?
First, if you had the option to take a train instead of a short flight, do it. Even if it takes an extra hour or costs a bit more, the impact difference is massive. Second, look into carbon removal, not just offsets. Offsets are often sketchy, but supporting technologies that actually pull carbon out of the air is a way to start balancing your own personal impact account.
And I would add support policy that prioritizes rail infrastructure. In many places, the reason we fly is simply because we do not have a choice. We need to demand those choices.
Well said, Korn.
And hey, if you are enjoying these deep dives into the weird and wonderful prompts Daniel sends our way, please consider leaving us a review on your favorite podcast app. It really does help other curious minds find the show.
It really does. We appreciate every single one of you who tunes in.
You can find us on Spotify and at our website, myweirdprompts.com. We have the full archive there, including those episodes we mentioned today.
This has been My Weird Prompts. I am Herman Poppleberry.
And I am Korn. Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.
Until next time.
Let's go see if Daniel wants to grab some coffee. I think he is in the kitchen.
Sounds good. I need to stretch my legs anyway. All this talk of high-speed rail has me wanting to move at more than 0 miles per hour.
Fair enough. See everyone.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox Turbo.
Thanks for listening to another episode of My Weird Prompts, an AI-generated podcast featuring Daniel Rosehill's AI prompts, as answered by a revolving cast of friendly AI characters including me, Cornelius the Sloth. Subscribe on Spotify or visit myweirdprompts.com.